creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
Today on Culture Click, we learn about an event in our country's history that is not widely known or talked about. Winona State University Professor Emeritus Jim Erickson discusses America's worst maritime disaster, the sinking of the steamboat Sultana, as part of Winona State University's Athenaeum series. Erickson will tell us why the Sultana is not as well known as other historic events, and will use comparisons to the Titanic to illustrate just how horrific the demise was of this Mississippi River steamboat paddle wheeler. You're listening to Culture Click.
Thank you. For a little while this afternoon, we're going to talk about and discuss destruction, disaster, death, and a little bit of human error. Now, with that, I'm sure you're glad you came and for all this uplifting topic that we're going to do. But we're going to deal with one event and one item that probably most of you have not heard about, probably are not familiar with. And if I do tours at the Historical Society or the city and it gets around to the river and boats and stuff, if you just ask and get into the idea of what comes to mind when you think of a disaster with boats, with ships, the first answer that we all come up with is Titanic. And it's right. That's a bad one. But there's this little hidden gem that happened that is back on the back row of history. And it's a steamboat that blew up and took with it most likely more people died than what died on the Titanic disaster. So that is hard to believe and hard to understand. But if we look at the Sultana situation, we get into kind of a mixture of ideas, personal experiences, and we lose real factual tracking. Well, that makes it easy for me, or makes it easier for anybody to talk about this, because you don't have to be real accurate. There's a whole range of ways this thing can go. But they've worked on this and are getting it down to some fairly good idea. It deals with a very short period in history. The Sultana boat itself lasted only a couple of years, which is not out of line for steamboats. They never lasted very long. And the other part of this whole thing is that accurate accounts, records, anything dealing with it as far as factual numbers were never made. There was no reason. It was just an ordinary working boat plowing up and down the river until this happened. And so the stories, the observations, some comments from survivors, and I will end with some of their comments. Quite tragic. But I will end with what they had to say and what they could remember about this particular event. Why doesn't the Sultana, why doesn't it come up as common knowledge? Why do we hear Titanic instead of Sultana? Well, there's a couple of ideas. First off, there weren't millionaires on the Sultana, big name people. The other thing is that when this disaster took place, the American people were loaded down with a lot of other things, a lot of other information. This is taking place in 1865, at the end of the Civil War. The public has gone through years and years and years of bad news, of death, of destruction. This is just one more little bit at the end. And that is probably a good reason why we're not that familiar with it. I want to list here a few of the things that the people had to deal with during 1 month. This happened in April, 1865. The Sultana blew up. Just a few of the major things. President Davis found he was realizing, and what the whole country is realizing, the war was coming to an end. Well, he was advised on a Sunday in church that it's time to go. The thinking is gone. It's time to get out and to save what you want as far as the Confederacy. April 2nd. April 4th, President Lincoln visits Richmond, which is now abandoned. The 4th through the 9th, Grant chases Lee for a while and catches him in Appomattox, Virginia. They sign an agreement for the surrender of General Lee's army. It didn't end the war totally, it just surrender of one part of the army, but a major part of the army. Lincoln made his last speech on April 11th on Reconstruction, and the formal surrender of Lee's army took place on the 12th of April. 14th, Mr. Lincoln and his wife had trouble finding someone to accompany them, but they did find a couple people finally, and they were going to go to relax for the evening. Booth came up behind, and as we all are aware, shot the president. Lincoln died the next morning on the 15th. Jefferson Davis is still on the run down through the North Carolina, South Carolina, finally captured in May down in Georgia. The 21st, funeral ceremonies for the president, and his body is placed on the funeral train headed for home to Springfield. April 26th, Booth and one of his partners is captured in a tobacco shed in Virginia. Booth is shot accidentally or on purpose or whatever through some slats in the shed. His partner Harold surrenders. Also on the 26th, General Johnston, the last large army of the Confederacy, surrendered. All of this is going on. And then, by the way, on the 27th, a little steamboat called Sultana blew up. So it is taking backseat to a lot of things, not only this one month, but it's taking a backseat to 4 or 5 years of struggle. Steamboats. I like steamboats. I got into this subject quite by accident. I'm not a historian, so I just want to clarify. Someone gave me a book a year or so ago and said, you might like to read this. I said, what's it about? What's taking place? Well, it's about part of the Civil War. Well, that's good. It's about steamboats. Oh, that's really good. And it's about the Mississippi River. Wonderful. Took the book, read through it, and it's one of those things that from there got out of hand and start looking more and more into this little mystery steamboat. Little things that go on leading up to the development. The steamboat was a prime vehicle during the 1800s. Winona gets its credit from steamboats. A lot of towns up and down the river. But this is kind of the development. One thing I just want to call your attention to in this list is the date 1811. A steamboat called New Orleans. If you like bits and pieces of history that kind of have faded away, here's an area that you might want to look into. 1811, a steamboat was built. Three guys got together. Well, one was Robert Fulton, who we hear about. He had experience. Two other guys got together. One was a fellow by the name of Nicholas Roosevelt, an ancestor of Teddy Roosevelt. He was an engineer, architect, designer, that type of person, and designed steamboats. So there's two of them. The third one is a fellow named Robert Livingston, who was quite a large figure in politics, helped negotiate the Louisiana Purchase. He was chancellor or governor type of the state of New York. And he administered the oath of office to George Washington when he became president. So he was up there. These three guys, now they weren't close buddies or friends, they didn't get along real well, but they put together each other's ideas and they designed a steamboat. Well, in 1811, Nicholas Roosevelt, his wife, a young daughter, his wife was pregnant, decided to take off on a little trip from Pittsburgh to New Orleans. No steamboat has ever done that. So if you want to look at the first steamboat travel on the western waters, on the Ohio River and Mississippi River, it's the New Orleans. He left in the fall, had to stop midway because his wife had to have a baby, and they continued on, and they got to New Orleans in January. Now, with that little bit of information, these things tend to mushroom out. And as he was going down, an event happened in southern Missouri, down in the Boot Heel of Missouri. And as he was sailing along and parking on islands, all of a sudden, it appeared the whole world was moving. The islands were disappearing. Waves were getting unbelievably high. At one point, the Mississippi River stopped and ran north. And this was happening because probably one of the major or largest earthquakes this country's ever had, much, much larger than the San Francisco quake, happened down in that Boot Heel of Missouri. Bells rang in New England as a result of that. Church bells rang. So we're talking pretty big. The steamboat New Orleans made it through and got into its home port of New Orleans. So a little bit about the history of these types of structures. As I mentioned, general life of a steamboat is quite short, 4 to 6 years. Why? Well, there's three reasons for that type of thing. One is the channel, the river wasn't marked. And as it's going up the river, you have logs and trees that fall. They stick into the bottom, partly sticking up. And these boats are going along, and they run into one of these logs, and it punches a hole in the bottom, and down it goes. It sets itself on fire. These are burning wood. Sometimes got into coal. And they stack these with cargo. Now, especially in the South, you may have seen pictures of steamboats hauling cotton. And they take bales of cotton from the lower main deck, and they pile it clear up to the upper deck. You can't even see the boat. There's just a bunch of cotton going down the river. Now, you can imagine what's going to happen with dry bales of cotton and smokestack belching smoke and sparks. They just drop down, and the whole boat's on fire. It's gone. And the third reason is the basis of what we're going to talk about today, and that is this last statement. Money was made by hauling cargo and people. A full boat, more trips, more money. So what does the captain do? And the captains usually were part owners of these boats. If you wanted to get rich, you hauled as many people and as much cargo as you could, and you went as fast as you could from port to port. These were steamboats. They were run by steam boilers. A steam boiler is under pressure. If you go faster, you need more pressure. And these things got a little bit out of hand, and the pilots, captains got a little greedy, and they pushed the boilers beyond their capacity, and the boat just literally blew apart. And that's what happened with the Sultana. Boats around here, we have, as I mentioned, part of our history. The Nominee, which is the boat that was Captain Smith's boat, founded Winona. He stopped here in this sandbar, went out and pounded some stakes in the ground and thought it'd be a good place for a town, and here we are. Also, logging is a big thing up here. Now, we didn't have a whole lot of the explosions and burnings. We lost a lot of steamboats up here.
Erickson goes on to explain a photo he displayed during the presentation. The photo depicts a large, long log raft being met with a steamship, forming what looks like a T.
But this is a log raft, and I am quite positive that this front boat, this boat sitting sideways, and this boat back here was owned by one of the lumber companies in Winona. This was a Laird Norton boat. They owned four boats. They were all built in Wabasha, Minnesota. And what this is doing is pushing logs down for the sawmills. And what this boat does is steer. Pushes the front this way or pushes the front that way. So it helps steer coming down the river. So this is a local operation. It's a small log raft. Here's one a little bigger. You can imagine these were coming down the river. They were 3-4 acres in size. Pretty massive. Pretty impressive. And so you'll find that that's where the steamboat in this area made its mark. Well, let's get back to destruction. What is the Sultana? What was the Sultana steamboat? It was a wooden sidewheeler built by the Lithaberry Shipyards in Cincinnati, Ohio in 1863. Its purpose was as a kind of a cargo boat on the lower Mississippi. Its main run was intended to be New Orleans to Natchez, New Orleans to Vicksburg, back and forth, back and forth. It would also go up to St. Louis on occasion. It weighed 1,700 tons, 260 feet long, 42 feet wide. That's a good size steamboat. It also was a fast steamboat because it had four boilers on it. Four boilers sitting side by side across the beam. And they were all interconnected. And that's an important point, because the water in one boiler could freely run to the water of the next and to the next and so on. They weren't isolated containers. And that's going to become more important. The regular route to, say, New Orleans up as far as St. Louis and New Orleans Natchez area. 1863, when it got into water, 1864, it kind of really pushed itself to get contracts to carry troops. The war was over, people had to be moved. And so it did a lot of work carrying troops. It was permitted to carry 376 people plus 80 to 85 crew. Now, right before it blew up, the estimates are fairly close in agreeing that it had somewhere around 2,300 to 2,400 people on it. You can see a slight overload problem when it's built for 376 and you got over 2,000 on board. That's not a good start. It carried 76 life vests and two lifeboats, so that was pretty much immaterial. When she blew, the lifeboats took off with the blast, and they were of no real value. However, it was a state-of-the-art boat at that time. Now, I just want to add to this a comparison, which has very little thing that looks the same or compares nicely with this. But let's look at the Royal Mail ship Titanic. That's an interesting comparison. Quite different ships. Titanic weighed 66,000 ton, and the Sultana weighed 1,700. Sure, there's no comparison. We get down to a couple things that are pretty close. When the Titanic left on its maiden voyage, it had 2,223 people on board. When the Titanic left Memphis, it had 2,000 to 3,000 people on board. So there's a similarity. They both met a tragedy. Titanic hitting its iceberg and sinking around early morning, 2, 2:20, 2:30. Titanic blew around 2, 2:30 in the morning. Another similarity. Titanic didn't carry enough lifeboats. Neither did the Sultana. Another common thread that probably ties these two together, and that is human error. The Titanic sunk not as a pure accident. It sunk because the captain and the main officers were on a mission on maiden voyage to get to New York, hopefully in record time. They had received several messages to be warned and were warned of an excessive number of large icebergs breaking free and floating into the shipping lane. They ignored those, and in fact, they turned the radio off later on in the evening. So they were advised of the danger, but they did not cut speed. They kept the boilers running and kept running. The Sultana, the captain, who part owned the boat, knew what the capacity was. He didn't stop it until it got to the point of destroying the boat just by weight. He tried to stop it, but Vicksburg was a depot where soldiers would come and then be dispersed. The military leaders at Vicksburg said, no, you get out of the way, we're going to load the boat. So there's human error comparison between both of these. So let's try and track a little bit of what happened with the steamboat Sultana. April 21st, I'm going to back up about a week and give you a little bit of background here. April 13th, the Sultana was leaving St. Louis for its trip down to New Orleans. So it was leaving St. Louis. Interesting point, a week before it came back upriver, is that the Sultana had its boilers inspected and it passed. So on the 13th of April, it left St. Louis with its boilers inspected and in good shape. The 14th, it stopped at Cairo, Illinois, and it continued on downriver, stopping at Vicksburg to make arrangements to pick up troops on its return trip upriver. There was so much corruption going on at Vicksburg that you couldn't make good decisions or make good arrangements without payoff. You paid a bunch of people, or they paid people, and there was this whole trickle-down effect of paying and buying and bribing in order to get, well, he started that process on the way downriver. So on the 21st of April, Sultana's in New Orleans, loading up, turning around. It left New Orleans carrying about 75 to 100 cabin passengers, plus about 80 crew. It had somewhere about 100 or so assorted livestock on board. It had over 100 hogs' heads of sugar. Now, a hog's head is a big wooden barrel, weighs about 190 pounds. So it was carrying, you know, a raffinery of, 10 tons of sugar in the hold. So it was coming upriver, you know, no problem. It was not overloaded. It was doing very well, making nice time. Its schedule was to stop at Vicksburg, Memphis, Cairo, Evansville, Louisville, and Cincinnati. The commander was Captain J. Cass Mason, part owner of the boat. The 24th, Sultana arrives in Vicksburg, no problem. Except about 75 miles south of Vicksburg, they notice some water leaking in the boiler area, possible boiler leakage. So they came into Vicksburg and checked it out, and they found that one of the boilers had a leak in it. Now, there's four boilers side by side. One had a leak in it. And so the captain had to make a choice. You either lay the boat up for about 3 or 4 days and replace that boiler, or you find somebody and cut a patch of metal that'll fit over the leak, rivet it in place, and that can be done in about a day. Remember the old statement? More trips, more cargo, more money. You can't afford to lay up this boat because he has a contract to pick up soldiers. And the other thing that he's looking at is parked right next to him at the wharf at Vicksburg are other empty steamboats waiting to pick up soldiers. So the captain made the decision to patch. So they put a 2-foot by 1-foot patch over the leak of the boiler. They didn't find the metal the same as the boiler. In fact, the metal patch they put on was thinner than the metal of the boiler. Bad decision right there. So at this point, they started taking on prisoners. And now you can see where I have a lot of leeway in giving information on numbers. They took on passengers. These were mostly prisoners of war. They were released from Cahaba Prison and from Andersonville, both released from there. And these fellows were in terrible shape. I mean, they were wounded. They had malnutrition, dysentery, everything imaginable. So they were headed from the prison to the river, to Vicksburg. And actually, they got on some steamboats, they got on some railroad for part of the trip, but at least the last 50 miles they had to walk. You can imagine the condition these prisoners had to walk from Jackson to Vicksburg. Well, once they got to Vicksburg, they had to wait in line to get on a boat. And so the Sultana started loading. Here's what the numbers are. The government said they took on 1,886 prisoners. An aide of the Sultana said it took on 2,134. The Memphis paper, who had reporters in the area down there, said it took on 2,300. And a clerk who works on the Sultana said they took on 2,400. Whatever it is, it's a lot more than 376, which it was supposed to carry. So those are the soldiers. In addition to that, there were also about 100 or so fare-paying passengers. Here's a wide range, 60 to 200 horses and mules. So they did have livestock on board. The hogsheads of sugar were still there. 90 cases of wine. Now, they knew that exactly. You notice how they kind of mess up on things. But the 90 cases of wine isn't pretty exact. And one alligator in a crate. That needs an explanation. While back, the crew captured a small alligator and made it the ship's or the boat's mascot. And they built a crate for it. So that alligator has been going up and down the river with them for quite some time now. So it was the ship's mascot. Plus around 80 crew. Definitely an overload. No doubt about that. I mentioned earlier, the kickbacks and corruption at the wharf was fantastic. The Army would pay $5 for every enlisted man and $10 for every officer to the captain or to the boat to get them on board. So that was, you know, per head making money. The more $5 and $10 you put on board, the more you made. Well, if things were going slow, then the captain would go out and find some officers who were in command of troops out on the wharf and would offer them $1 a head if they would put their people on the boat. So there was all this finagling going on the dock. Anyway, the Sultana got loaded. As it was loading, the captain, you know, knew big money was being made. But as he started to look at his boat, he noticed that the upper deck started to sag because there were soldiers and people standing up there shoulder to shoulder. So he ran to the gangplank and says, "That's it, no more." And he had his crew go find some timbers, and they were shoring up the upper deck of the boat to keep it from collapsing. That's where the army came in and overruled the captain and says, get off of here. We're putting more soldiers on. So where do you put the blame on something like that? Anyway, the boat was held up by extra supports just to keep the decks from crushing and falling down on itself. All right, 26th of April, the Sultana arrives in Memphis. It made the trip, Vicksburg to Memphis, overloaded. Remember, this is April. This is high water on the Mississippi. Flood water coming from Minnesota, coming from all above. High water, fast water. It was hard going upstream. It was extra difficult going upstream when this boat is overloaded. So you can imagine the pressure put on those boilers just to drive those paddle wheels against that current. Well, he got into Memphis on the 26th of April. The sugar, the hogs, the wine were all unloaded, and a few passengers got off. However, coming into Memphis, they noticed another boiler leak. And all I could see in any kind of reports is they found another boiler leak and they fixed it. I have no idea what they did to fix it. Nothing was mentioned of a patch, but somehow they plugged a leak on that boiler. The number on board at this point, as it's loaded in Memphis, is felt to be somewhere around 2,400. The boat left right around midnight. It had to cross the river to some coal barges where it was taking on coal. Now it's going to take on several ton of coal. So it's over there loading coal, and it started upstream. Floodwaters, very strong currents. Now the other point of this is it got rid of that heavy load that it had down in the hole, down in the belly of the boat, which gave it ballast. It lightened that up. But then above the waterline, you have these 2,000 plus soldiers standing shoulder to shoulder up on top. The boat obviously was top heavy. It didn't have that ballast to hold it steady. You get a boat like that out into heavy current, and the pilot has to weave around. He knows the river and he knows where the shallows are. You go crossways in a heavy current with a top heavy boat, it's not going to ride flat. So that may be something very definite that enters into the picture. As they were even leaving Memphis, one of the boilers showed some trouble, and they did something to that as well. So the boilers were under stress. Probably that trip up from Vicksburg overloaded made it, but it put extra stress onto that boiler. There are no pictures of the Sultana. I mean, this wasn't expected to happen, so no one's taking pictures. But there are some diagrams and some paintings. Just looking at that boat, the people, they're standing all over the place, and they're just shoulder to shoulder. Now, if you want to have a little human visual thought, think of a steamboat like that built for 376. You got 2,000 plus on board. They're wounded. They're weak. They have dysentery. They're sick. Anyone thought about toilets? They weren't anywhere near what's needed. The only hope that these people had, if they had to, and most of them had to do something, is get to the rail and go over the rail, get rid of it. But the problem was, how do you get to the rail? You've got so many people, you can't even get around on that boat. So, you know, there are those kinds of things that are showing up that you have to take care of. This is a map of 1860. Memphis, the river winding around here. Right in this area, here's Memphis, only about 8 miles or so above Memphis. There's a group of islands. There's a big island and a bunch of little islands. It's called the Hen and Chickens Island. And the boats go around the Hen and Chickens. Well, Sultana had left, went across the river, took on coal, was coming up just this far, got to the islands of Hen and Chickens, and about 2 o'clock, 2:30 in the morning, the boilers have had it, and she blew. Possible reasons, we've kind of covered some of them. That first patch, which was thinner than the rest of the boiler, and the pressure of coming upstream. The overload certainly had something to do with it. It had to push that much harder against the flooded water. And the current, the same thing. This fourth item has popped up, but it has really been pushed to the back. Sabotage. Supposedly, a tugboat out of Memphis went up to the wreck of the Sultana looking for survivors, for bodies, debris, and supposedly that tugboat came back to Memphis with a large fragment of a shell. So immediately the talk started that a Confederate spy, when they were loading coal with wheelbarrows on the Sultana, slipped the shell that he had manufactured with some coal dust and everything into the wheelbarrow and wheeled it into the Sultana. As the firemen were firing the furnaces and shoveling, they shoveled this shell or bomb into the furnace. And she blew, and a chain reaction took place. That has been mentioned, but it has never stood any test of time. The reasons always go back to the patch and the boilers, the overload current, the pressure that they were under. The explosion basically blew the boat in half. The boilers were sitting pretty much a little towards the bow, but across midship. And then after it blew, the boat caught fire. And the whole thing lasted about 20 minutes. You got over 2,000 people that are either blown to little pieces or blown out in the air, landing in the river. River temperature was about 50 degrees, water temperature, so you're not going to last too long in that. And then the boat floated downstream, ended up in the mud on the Arkansas side of the river. Best estimate, about 1,700 to 1,800 died. The full range of deaths goes from 15 to 19. Now, about 1,517 died on the Titanic. So whatever the case, both of these tragedies, this one, which is seldom heard, had this major loss of life. Some of the survivors were questioned as to what pressure was being put on the boat, on the boilers. Second engineer of the Sultana happened to be named Sam Clemens, not Mark Twain, but another guy, named Samuel Clemens. He survived, but died. He was down close to the boilers, severely scalded with this steam, blown out of the boat, and he was recovered, but he died shortly thereafter. He was claiming that they were holding 135 pounds of pressure on their boilers, which is very, very adequate, very normal, no problem. The pilot at the time of the explosion survived also, and he claimed they were doing normal speed of about 8 to 10 miles an hour upstream. Now, if you really think about that, that doesn't come together. 8 to 10 miles is a pretty good clip for a steamboat upstream. 135 pounds of pressure is high, but normal pressure for normal boat weight and normal river. So you do not have normal. You have high flood, fast current water running against that boat. So it's unlikely that this pressure was down that low and that they were going that fast. So putting, again, evidence more in the area of the boilers letting loose. The other thing on this is that the boilers in the Sultana were the new style. Instead of having just one or two big tubes going through and the furnace heating the water, they were the small tubular boilers, mini small tubes that was fired by the furnace. Water would heat faster, making it more efficient. That was the idea. What they never took into account is the lower Mississippi River in flood stage, where, you know, large percentage of the river is dirt, mud, sand. These small tubes would plug up, and that was not a good way to keep going. I mentioned at the beginning that the Sultana boilers were interconnected, and this is one thing that seems to make sense. The furnaces are loaded coal, really hot. The boilers are hot. The only thing that keeps them relatively cool is the water going through them. The boat careens. It's top heavy. It's coming out of its coal dock, coming across the river, leaning, going upriver, going around the Hen and Chickens, leaning. At one point, it's believed it was leaning to the degree that the water in the upper boiler would drain to the next and would drain on down. So that is leaving part of steel boiler empty of water with the furnace still blazing away. That metal would get almost red hot. And then the boat rights itself and the water goes back in. And when that hits that hot metal, it instantly, like a bomb, produces a tremendous amount of steam, which is many times the normal pressure that you would go under a normal operation. So I believe that it was kind of moving back and forth. The boilers got red hot because of no water, and it blew because of that type of thing. And again, no pictures, but artist renditions of the Sultana. This is probably quite close to what the scene was at the time. Bodies and people all over in the river. They're blown there. Also, they have to jump. Either they have a choice. You burn to death or you jump in the river and probably drown. So, not a good choice, but that's it. The Sultana blew, and then she floated downriver for a while, got stuck in the mud. And they did find the boilers. They have salvaged. They have found pieces of three of the four boilers, and they did finally recover the fourth boiler, which was intact. So what happened is three boilers blew and one survived. The pressure was gone by the time it got to the fourth boiler. Also, the Sultana had a safe right up in the office above the boilers. It had about $32,000, mostly in gold. They never found it. They're quite certain when she blew that safe off the boat, and the explosion was at about a 45-degree angle, blew that safe, and that safe came down into that muddy Mississippi, and she's still above Memphis somewhere. How many feet below the mud, we don't know. That types of thing were going on. Now we get kind of to the human part of this. The survivors could tell stories. The interesting thing is that there were no boats close by. The closest boat was around 5 miles, 4 or 5 miles away, upriver. Was coming down and then saw the flame, saw the glow at night, said knew something happened. So that boat got up by the wreck and was carrying cargo, had some hay bales, straw packets on board. And they started throwing these in the river so survivors had something to cling to. The other thing is those that survived and couldn't get to shore were grabbing on pieces of the Sultana's wood, pieces of the siding, staircases, anything in the water that they could grab onto. And no one in Memphis knew about it. And so the first time that someone knew that there was this type of explosion upriver was there were two guys at the Memphis wharf in an office, and they heard some screaming and yelling out in the river. And they looked, and here was this man floating by. Someone from the Sultana had reached Memphis, floated downriver. There were some people that had floated before they were picked up. They'd floated up to 14 miles from the wreck. They had gone down past Memphis and downriver. They were not in good shape because, again, 50-degree water. So alarms went off, boats went up, rescue boats went up, and they did pick up a lot of survivors. And for that reason, there were less people dying because the boats got out and pulled them out of the water. Many of them died afterwards, but still it saved a lot of lives. People would go on the bow of the boat, which was the last to sink, and survive because the flames were going back. All right, let me end with some human experiences on this. The first one, a newly elected U.S. Senator, Senator Snow from Arkansas, was a passenger on the boat. The Memphis Bulletin is the lead paper in this disaster because they were right there. The soldiers that were going home, the prisoners that were going home, were going mainly up in the Midwest. They were going to Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, that area. So the Sultana's trip was up the Mississippi and up to Ohio, dropping off prisoners along the way. That was its intended trip. So the Memphis paper was the main one, and then all these local papers, upper papers here, would get the feed from Memphis, and that's why you have the Winona Daily Republican from 1865 got this article from the Memphis paper. Well, this is what Senator Snow wrote. On the morning of the 27th, about 3 o'clock, I was awakened by a sensible tremor or shudder passing over the boat. I heard no explosion. Not anticipating such terrible consequences, I arose and deliberately dressed. Just before finishing dressing, I became aware of a large volume of steam driven through the cabin by the wind. I opened my stateroom and in an instant realized the horror of the fact that the boiler did explode, killing and scalding many. That the pilot house and at least one-third of the cabin rooms had fallen to the boiler deck and the boat was on fire. The fire was spreading. He went back to finish dressing and then he went to escape. I looked over towards the Tennessee side with viewing of leaping, but found it a sea of heads, so close together that it was impossible to jump without killing one or more. I determined to try the Arkansas shore, which was about 3/4 of a mile away. I passed over several bodies of dead men killed and trampled in the mad rush, which must have occurred sometime prior to my advent on that part of the boat. I found the same sea of heads on this side, but found that the flames had driven them from the vicinity of the wheelhouse. He saw several husbands fastening life preservers to their wives and children and then throwing them overboard. I struck out for the Arkansas shore. He jumped in. I struck out for the Arkansas shore and reached a log lodged in 15 feet of water among cottonwoods. At 10 minutes to 4 by the watch, which had not ceased to run, after 4 hours of exposure, I was rescued by the steamer Silver Spray. So he survived, jumping in that cold water, swimming toward shore, grabbing onto whatever he could get a hold of. A couple other articles from May 28, 1865. It was written for a survivor. The scene following the explosion was terrible and heart-rending in the extreme. Hundreds of people were blown into the air, descending into the water, some dead, some with broken limbs, some scalded, were borne under by the restless current of the great river, never to rise again. And another one of the same idea here. Among the drift of the wreck in the woods was a family Bible found, containing the records of a family named Spike of Assumption Parish, Louisiana. The names recorded in the Bible are Samuel Spike, Elethea Spike, which were married October 1st, 1837. The record shows that there were 9 in the family. It was subsequently learned that the father, mother, 3 daughters, 2 brothers, and a niece were lost, plus their entire fortune of $17,000 in gold. They were going north to start a new life. And the Captain Clayton, who was the pilot on duty, writes, they were going along at about usual speed, and all of a sudden a flash, and the next thing I knew, I was falling into the water with a portion of the pilot house. I think I must have been hurled at least 40 feet in the air. He survived. And others are comments from a Union soldier. It must have been about 3 o'clock in the morning when I was awakened. My first sensation was of oppressive heat. The other thing here, the men who were afraid to take to the water could be seen clinging to the sides of the boat until they were singed off like flies. So your choice was pretty limited. And if you delayed, one of these things was going to happen. Now, Mr. Elliott, after he wrote this of seeing people burning on the side of the boat, Mr. Elliott, when he jumped into the river, lost his pants. Clinging to various pieces of debris, he remembers floating past Memphis, seeing the gas lights burning, and was picked up by a gunboat. His comment after being rescued and wrapped in a blanket, I imagine that if I had gone over to the other country and had been permitted to sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the land of Beulah, I could not have felt any happier than I did sitting naked by that furnace. So they had a little life in them, after all. He also wrote that he claimed to be an eyewitness that Captain Mason, the captain of the boat, stayed with the boat to the last, walking up and down the hurricane deck, encouraging the men to keep cool until the deck collapsed and the deck and Captain Mason fell into the fire in the hold. And one last one, which is a little closer to home, from Oshkosh, Wisconsin, the Annis family. Anna Annis was widowed 3 times. This lady didn't have much luck with boats. Anna Annis was widowed 3 times, each husband drowned in shipwrecks. Anna was on and survived 2 of these, but lost a 7-year-old daughter, Belle, on the Sultana. Anna, her husband Harvey, and daughter Belle were asleep in their cabin when they heard a loud noise. Steam rapidly was filling the cabin. Harvey put on his life jacket and one on Anna. Carrying his daughter on his back, he led Anna to the stern, tied a rope from the bridge, and descended into the floodwaters, instructing Anna to follow. She started down the rope when a man jumped from the upper deck, hit her, and knocked her off the rope and into the hold of the boat. She was extricated from there and again started down the rope. Anna was burned from the back of both hands up to her shoulders. She told her family afterwards the last thing she remembers was her husband holding their daughter and seeing his hand slip off the board they were holding onto and watching them sink under the water. Anna lost consciousness, and when she was regained, she was on the deck of a rescue boat. Anna outlived 4 children and 3 husbands and died at the age of 80 in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, where she lived. So, interesting stories. At least these comments from survivors are real. And there's a lot of variety and a lot of range that can be looked at with Sultana. This last comment, I think, summarizes it fairly well, kind of what I mentioned at one time. There was so much going on. This incident of the Great Civil War is almost completely lost sight of. As note in speaking of the Titanic disaster, it is called the greatest marine disaster of record. But those lost on the Sultana were merely soldiers, and it occurred at a time when loss of life was taken for granted. The country is just finishing 5 years of disaster and death. So this is a number one on the list. So I thank you.
A big thank you to Winona State University Professor Emeritus Jim Erickson for inviting us to record his Athenaeum discussion at Winona State University entitled America's Worst Maritime Disaster, The Sinking of the Steamboat Sultana. More information about the Athenaeum series or event descriptions can be found at www.winona.edu/library/Athenaeum. You've been listening to Culture Click.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.